cool. So who first saw me speak about Bitcoin? I think 4 or 5 years ago in the crowd. 4 or 5 years ago. Remember when I spoke about it for the first time? What was the price of Bitcoin? It was about $15,000-$16,000. Remember? What's the price of Bitcoin today? Okay. So best performing asset in the entire world for the last 10 to 12 years. There's no asset that's outperformed Bitcoin. And every time I come to one of these business conferences, I always ask, what's the price? Okay, now today I don't want to talk about the price. I actually want to talk about something that's more profound, because I think something is up. Something is up that's quite tectonic. And I think a lot of us are just looking at Bitcoin from a price go up, price go down perspective. Alec did ask me to speak about both AI and Bitcoin. I'm going to talk about how these two things are actually interrelated and how they're coming together. And what's happening in the world today, if you take a look at what Trump is up to, is actually very much interlocked and merging together. And I think we are not seeing it for what it is. And hopefully today I'm going to expound on that a little bit, and then Alec and I will do a bit of a Q&A associated with that. But I think something tectonic is underway. I believe we are birthing a new world order. I think things are changing completely all around us and we're not recognizing it. There's a book called The Fourth Order by Strauss and Howe, and they speak about where we are right now. Like every 80 years, something tectonically changes. There's four changes within that every 20, 30 years. They said from the year 2008 with the financial crisis up until now, we're kind of midway through the fourth of the fourth. So we're in the fourth change or the fourth evolution. And this is the crisis phase. And I think what Trump's doing, these announcements that you're hearing, strategic Bitcoin reserves, you hear what he's doing with AI and these big investments, etc. These things make sense when you look underneath the covers. So let's take a look at it. Today, if you take a look at why are we in a crisis, nothing's working. Think about it for a second, right? Our money doesn't work anymore. Doesn't. You in the room here have assets, so you have the ability to navigate your way around inflation and currency debasement. But you are not reflective of what's happening in the rest of the world today. There are 3 billion people that are unbanked. Most of society in South Africa don't have exposure to the things that you have exposure to. And those folks don't have hope. We've never seen suicide rates higher than we've seen today. We've never seen depression. We've never seen human birth rates starting to collapse. We're seeing population declines. China is suffering from this. The United States, these G7 countries have an issue associated with this. What's going on? In my opinion, it's because the money is broken. Right? If you take a look at central banks, what banks do, what treasuries do to deflate money, to inflate certain aspects, to completely debase what you and I call fiat currency, we understand today that that is not sustainable, right? So if you take a look at labor, energy, money, trust, food, everything's broken. And what worries me about South Africa today is that we speak about things that aren't really relevant in this new world order. We speak about labor in a very much a 20th century way. We speak about money and VAT and budgets in a very 20th century way. When we talk about VAT, Donald Trump talks about a strategic Bitcoin reserve. And they talk about digital assets. And they're redefining money. They're moving money away from central banks and debasement, and they're moving it into this decentralized framework. And it's a new way to store value. A value that maintains its value over time. This is a redefinition. Labor. We talk about jobs. Guess what? AI is here. Most of you in this room know AI is here. So labor is going to be redefined. Why? Because intelligence is separating from human consciousness. And that separation of intelligence from human consciousness is going to be one of our biggest challenges. Because who we are, when we meet each other, what do? When we meet each other, we ask ourselves, what do you do? That's the first thing we ask. What's your name? And the first next question is, what do you do? Our identity and who we are so interrelated, so dependent on the work that we do. But that is being redefined today. Artificial intelligence is birthing a whole new world order of jobs, work, and identity. We in South Africa, we fight for jobs in this old economic way. We talk about VAT, and our budget has no ideation inside of it. It's got no technological aspect to it in any way or form. And that's very, very worrying for me. Why? Because I believe AI and Bitcoin are very symbiotic. When you speak about these two things, you can't separate them out. They actually depend on it. Why? AIs need Bitcoin. Today, AIs do things in a very automated way, in a very dumb way. In the next 3 to 5 years, AIs are going to do things in a much more automated way. We've already seen some of that automation. When you get into an Uber, you know what's magical about an Uber ride? Wasn't the fact that you called the driver through a mobile app. You know what's magical? Is that you climbed in, you spoke to him, and you climbed out. And when you climbed out, you paid. And you paid without paying. The machine spoke to the machines, and settlement happened relative to that cab ride. We are going to see autonomous vehicles accepting payment in that way. Autonomous vehicles driving themselves to a fueling station to get their batteries charged back up. Autonomous vehicles driving themselves to a repair shop. And that transaction enablement will happen in a distributed way. So transaction enablement for AI will be Bitcoin. Authentication for AI and repudiation for AI is a massive gap today. The biggest challenge that we have in the world today when it comes to AI is what? Trust. We don't know if what it's saying is real. We don't know what it's showing is real. The images, the text, the verbiage, etc. It needs a repudiation layer. It needs a source of truth. It needs to a place to authenticate and to prove it is what it is. You can clearly see on a base layer, just the most application layer aspect of AI. AI is going to need to transact. AI is going to need to repudiate and authenticate. And you can see the marriage between that and a network like Bitcoin that enables true trust, decentralized trust, where you can't switch things off. It's immutable, right? Irrevocable. You can see the synergies there. But the synergy that I'm most excited about is what Bitcoin does for energy, for AI. AI's biggest challenge right now is energy networks. We have a big challenge in this country and in every country in the world when it comes to our grids. Our grids are old. Our grids are not keeping up. We want to transition to new sources of energy, renewables, etc. We want to bring things back. But the problem with our grids is that they were not built for the energy that we require. What Bitcoin does, and I want all of you to take this away today, go study Bitcoin mining more. Go study how the proof of work protocol works with Bitcoin. Bitcoin miners are power hungry. They're these machines that you plug in, and these machines consume power. And what's beautiful about them is they have certain attributes to them. They have the ability to take energy and give energy back in nanoseconds. And the ability to consume energy and to give it back at the rate. They can consume gigawatts of energy and give gigawatts of energy back in nanoseconds. You can switch off a Bitcoin miner, decommission it, and you can bring it back up again instantaneously. We have never seen a consumer of energy with that profile and that capability. And because it can do that, you know what it does? It stabilizes grids. Bitcoin mining stabilizes a grid. Today in Eskom, Eskom's got massive problems. Why? Duck curve. Right? It's a traditional problem all over the world. Duck curve. In the morning, you shave, you use the geyser, kettle, etc. Then you leave. And what happens? That's the head of the duck. And you get to the back of the duck. And you come back home again. You get the tail of the duck. You shower. You do all the things at home. We consume energy most in the morning and in the evening. In between is the big challenge for energy generators and providers. They call it the duck curve. And what did Eskom do over the last 24 to 36 months? They allowed us to deploy so much solar on our business roofs, on our personal roofs, etc. We actually, the number inside of Eskom the other day, the number that was disclosed is up to 3.8 gigs of solar was deployed. We took 3.8 gigs off the duck's back. So what happened was the duck's back collapsed. So now Eskom has a problem. They've got to give you all their power in the morning, and then the duck's back collapses, and there's this massive gap in the evening. You want their power again. Those turbines, what do they do in between that in the day? And then guess what? We've got all these renewable energy projects happening. All this wind, all the solar, all this stuff trying to get onto the grid. But when the sun is shining and giving, that's not when Eskom needs the power. Right? When the wind is blowing, it's not necessarily when the grid needs that power. So what happens is renewable guys can't get into the grid. Eskom struggles because they've got to slow down these massive turbines. And then they have to boot them back up again. And just slowing those things down costs so much money from a maintenance perspective. Now, guess what? You introduce a Bitcoin mine. You click a Bitcoin mine into that entire equation, and what you get is something that can consume all that power instantaneously and give it back instantaneously. And guess what? You create grid stability. The cool thing about a Bitcoin mine, you know what it does? It makes the economics of renewable energy make more sense. You can start generating monetary value from source before the transmission lines are even in the ground. We're seeing it in Africa, where they're breaking hydroelectric plants, they're building them out before the transmission lines are even laid down. The Bitcoin miners are spinning up, they're generating energy, they're converting that energy into BTC, into Bitcoin, and that Bitcoin funds the transmission lines that get built out. More than 50% of the energy in the world today utilized by Bitcoin, this massive network, is renewables. It's gas. Flared gas. Instead of flaring it up into the atmosphere and burning it, we grab that and we suck that into a Bitcoin mine and we convert that gas into energy and we make Bitcoin with it. Methane emissions, curtailed energy, stabilizing grids. AI needs this because AI needs these energy grids to mature up. That's what Bitcoin does for AI. So you can see the interrelation between these two things. So there's massive. So when Trump did the SPR and he announced the SPR, don't look at it like this guy's just buying a bunch of, or he's taking a bunch of confiscated Bitcoin. And now read more into it. There's more at play here. He's done the SPR. He's told the Bitcoin miners he's very friendly towards them. He's encouraging Bitcoin mining, right? He's made it very clear that he's going to acquire more Bitcoin in a budget neutral manner. Right? He's issued out what they call bit bonds or bond bits. It's a 10-year bond issued out by Treasury. 90% of that money that you spend on that bond goes towards government and they utilize the 10% of that bond. You know what they're going to do? Buy Bitcoin. At the end of the 10 years, they pay you out your interest. And guess what? Whatever the Bitcoin price is at that time, you halve it. They take half, you take half. They are blending it into their debt reserves. They're making their debt more attractive in this way. Tether is another company, and I'm going to talk about that from a stablecoin perspective. Expect in the next 12 to 24 months, little prediction, I believe Tether, and I'm going to talk about Tether in a second, will become a stablecoin regulated inside the United States. If they do this, they will digitize the dollar truly in a governed way, and they will rule. That will be the global reserve currency for the next 100 years again, if they do this. Very simple. Strategic Bitcoin reserve, Bitcoin mining, stable coins, and the whole AI play. Can you see the new world order birthing? Brand new intelligences, disparate species of cognitions running on energy grids that have been matured up by this thing called Bitcoin. Interoperating and talking and transaction enabling and authenticating, utilizing this base layer that we call Bitcoin. This is the new stack. Our current order is based on land, military power, right? It's based on NATO and WHO and OPEC and those things. Those things don't matter so much anymore. That's why you see Trump pulling out of those things. Because in a world of abundance, when we move into a world where energy is abundant, where intelligences are abundant, where money cannot be debased anymore because it's now algorithmically controlled and it becomes the substrate to humanity. That's a new dispensation and that's a new world order. And that's what's happening at the moment. So I just want to go through some of that. So the fourth turning I spoke about, I want to talk about some of the things about Bitcoin's attributes as it is today. Now, Alec told me no slides. That's why I'm not putting up slides and I can't remember them all. So I'm going to go through them. So right now, what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is not this thing that money go up, money go down, play money. Two people met me earlier today at the back of the tent and asked me, is this thing going to go to zero or not? I'm like, geez, wait, what? Have you ever in the history of mankind seen a $2 trillion asset go to zero? Bitcoin is now the eighth largest asset in the entire world. It is bigger than Saudi Aramco. If it hits $150,000 to $180,000, it comes very close to NVIDIA. If it goes beyond $250,000, it's on its way to gold, which is sitting at around $16 to $20 trillion. We're marching on our way to gold. $900 trillion of assets in the entire world. Commercial real estate, gold, art, keep going, right? Equities, et cetera, all together. 50% of that 900 trillion, 450 trillion. You know what that 450 trillion is? People attempting to store value over time? What's the best mechanism for storing value over time ever invented by mankind? Is this thing called Bitcoin. So it's going after that. So eighth largest, it's the fastest growing asset. It's the most popular asset. It's the most interesting asset. It's the most digital asset. It's the most useful. It's the most global. It's the most scarce. It's the most impenetrable. And you think it's going to go away. Right? So I want to put some of these statistics on the table. What is this network actually? It's 20 gigawatts of power. Michael Saylor came up with some of these stats, and we've known some of these stats for a while. It's 20 gigawatts of power. It's 820 or 860 exahashes. Hash rate, computing power. It's got almost a trillion invested in it. There are now 400 million BTC hodlers. 400 million. There are now 650 million crypto hodlers, depending on the Bitcoin network. It's got 4 million ASICs, Bitcoin energy machines. Those machines I told you that consume energy, there's 4 million of them securing the network. A total of 1.5 billion ASICs chips. And that's equal to, if you wanted to attack that, you know how many laptops you'd need? Just over a trillion laptops. There's no government in the world that can hack it. There is nobody that's ever, it hasn't been hacked. It cannot be hacked. It's completely decentralized. And guess what was a major, major announcement? Was stablecoins. The CEO of Tether is in the United States right now. He went to the United States for the first time last week. Trump invited him over. They want USDT, which is the symbol for their stablecoin, to come over. You know what Tether is today? They're the 18th largest holder of USA debt in the entire world. Today. They buy treasuries to back up the dollars that they issue out as US dollar coins. So there's a parity between your dollar coin and the real dollar. And they buy debt to stack that up in the back. So they keep buying US treasuries, US debt. I mean, here's the numbers. They're less than 100 employees. They're less than 100 employees. They've just announced that they're moving everything onto the Bitcoin network. You know what they did in 2024 in profits? $13.7 billion. Less than 100 employees made $13.7 billion of profit in 2024. You know how many users they have? 400 million. They almost have 500 million. You know what they're going after? The other 2.5 billion unbanked people. So if you think this doesn't have utility, and we keep hearing this all the time, this thing doesn't have utility. There are 400 million people storing their wealth in USDT that runs on top of Bitcoin. They're adding 30 million new people every quarter. That's 10 million a month. That's 250,000 new users every day. That's Tether's numbers. They have 115 billion in treasuries. And their strategic Bitcoin reserve sits right now just over 100,000 Bitcoin. They have a commitment that 15% of their net profits, they buy Bitcoin and they store it in strategic Bitcoin reserve. That's running on top of the Bitcoin network and they're consuming USA debt. Now think about that for a second. China would have hurt the United States really badly because in just the last few years, China moved from 3 trillion, owning 3 trillion of USA debt. And I think they're just under a trillion now. If it weren't for Tether, the United States debt issue would have been a massive issue. If you don't think the problem's big, the United States has it, but it's our problem. We have a $36 trillion problem. Biggest economy in the world is suffering. I believe they're undergoing a sovereign debt crisis right now, the United States. But they're using levers like this and in very intelligent ways to take that debt, to make that debt tradable, buyable, in a way that's very different from nation state ways they used to do it. And that's very, very intelligent. So ETFs, I'll mention that as another set of statistics. Remember the ETFs launched. Have you seen the stats on the ETFs? We've never seen $113 billion of inflows into the ETF, into any ETF that quickly in the history of ETFs. So it's the fastest ever debut of an ETF, the IBIT one from BlackRock. In 3 days, it's reached $10 billion of inflows. You know how long gold took to get to 10 billion? 3 years. It's the fastest to ever hit 50 billion. And they did that in six months. That's astonishing. So pent up demand. What do corporations know that you don't know? What do 400 million people know that you don't know? What do 650 million crypto people know that you don't know? Why are people fleeing into this asset class? It's because the money is broken. That's why they're fleeing into it. What we're going to see moving forward is you're going to see more USA states declaring strategic Bitcoin reserves. I believe Utah will be the first one. It's either Utah or Texas. Go take a look at the size of those two economies combined in relation to South Africa's economy. Just go take a look at the size of Texas' economy, their GDP. That's going to establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve. Why? We're going to see at least 12 to 20 states over the next 12 to 24 months establishing strategic Bitcoin reserves. Abu Dhabi just declared that they have been buying ETFs like mad. SARB 121 was just repealed in the United States. That means banks in the United States will soon have the ability to be custodians of crypto, i.e. Bitcoin. I'm just trying to paint what's happening in the world today. People say this thing is volatile. Another two gentlemen, I don't know where they are here, they came to me and said, yeah, but it's so volatile. You know why it's so volatile? I love this. It's a joke. It's a 400 trillion asset being traded for 200 trillion or for 2 trillion today. That's what I believe. That's why it's volatile. And if it's volatile, you should love it. I love what Michael Saylor says. He says volatility is like fire. To the normie, when you see the fire, you run away. But to Henry Ford, he took the fire and he shoved it into the combustion engine. Elon Musk takes fire and he shoves it into a rocket and he makes this interplanetary. You can take this fire, shove it into your business, and watch what it does. Volatility around Bitcoin is a beautiful thing. We want more vol. It attracts traders. You can put more financial instrumentation around that volatility and you can establish something that is quite profound. And I want to congratulate the Altface Capital folks. They did this. Yes, I'm the chairman of the board of their company, but what they've done is they've taken Bitcoin and not run away and be scared of it. They've taken it, taken the fire, and they've shoved it into the engine. And they're the first publicly traded company in Africa to establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve. Yeah, I have to disclaim that. I'm not pitching Altface Capital. Sorry. BuyShares, great company, going lots of places. there's more to come. Why? Because we already have submitted to the SARB that we want to list two securities on the exchange linked to Bitcoin. So you can buy Bitcoin exposure via these securities on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. I believe if we get approval, and we're waiting for it, this will be the first time a company in South Africa or Africa has ever done that. And it'll be similar to the MicroStrategy play. Very similar. There's lots of learnings there happening in South Africa. You run into this fire. You don't run away from this fire when you comprehend what this fire is. So I've explained what Trump's up to. He's established the stablecoin. They call it the Genius Act. Watch what's going to come from the Genius Act. The Loomis Act. You know what Senator Loomis's act? It just went. If you're in the BNC Bitcoin group, I put something in there today. That's the Loomis bill. That's been submitted. You know what the Loomis bill is? They're going to buy 1 million Bitcoin over 5 years in tranches of 200,000 a year. That may be enacted in the next 2 to 3 months. That's a nation state moving away from just hodling something that they've confiscated to actually acquiring 1 million BTC. You've heard Russia making noises. We know that China is actually sitting arguably on a larger hoard of Bitcoin than even the United States. And we suspect that they're up to BTC hodling and purchasing right now. So we will see gamification. Now, what's happening? Now, people ask me, like, what's happening? So, okay, you've explained this. So in South Africa, this is the stuff that I'm involved in and some people here in the audience are involved in. So you know what we're doing in South Africa? We're engaging with SARB. You saw our Reserve Bank governor and what he did in Davos, which wasn't his greatest moment. Yeah, we'll talk about that. But the point is, I'll be going back in there. I'm engaging with SARB extensively at the moment. And we need to do that. On the 2nd of April, I have a session inside of the South African Reserve Bank for an entire afternoon to settle this matter inside of SARB. And my intention is to get the SARB to agree to establish a South African strategic Bitcoin reserve. I'm pushing very hard for that. Okay. Don't know if it'll happen. Don't jinx me. we are engaging with the IFWG. The IFWG is the representation of all the entities, SARS, SARB itself, the intelligence, etc. It's a working group within SARB. We are engaging them. Why? We want to give them the tools to enable them to monitor the industry so banks can become custodians. Banks want to custody Bitcoin in South Africa today. I was on the board of Discovery Bank until September, October last year. I can tell you what, they want to do it. Nedbank want to do it. Standard Bank want to do it. The banks are ready. The only reason you haven't seen these announcements happen is because the Prudential Authority walks in and has no capability to keep them responsible or to monitor that. Our attempt through the IFWG engagement is to give them the tools and services so they can truly manage the ecosystem. I mentioned Altvest, first one in Africa. At Eskom, did you hear yesterday? Did you hear Dan get up? Dan said something twice, which is quite profound. He said Bitcoin twice in his keynote. Eskom is engaging with us deeply right now on deploying potentially one of the biggest Bitcoin mines on the African continent for sure. And it will take South Africa from where it is today to probably in the top 5 or 6 hash rate under management in the world. And the reason we're doing it is not because Eskom's rolling in excess power. It's because there's a lot of curtailment happening on the grid right now. They want to bring those renewables on. We want to engage with them. We're engaging right now with the largest solar provider or solar farm in South Africa today to attach a Bitcoin mine to that instance. So it's happening. My word to you is it's happening. It's not coming. SARB's engaging deeply. We're seeing publicly traded companies taking steps forward. Eskom itself, right? Where are we at with Eskom right now? I can't disclose because we are under NDA, but I'll tell you what, we've made more progress than we've ever made before. And they need Bitcoin mining badly. They've got assets, they've got everything, and we can leverage those. And through that, South Africa can actually start creating a Bitcoin stockpile. Because you know what's really cool about it? As we build up this Bitcoin, Eskom has a choice. They can either sell the Bitcoin, right? And we pay them out in fiat. And you know what? We can pay them every 10 minutes. They've never had a customer that can consume 2 to 5 gigawatts of power and give it back to them in nanoseconds that can pay them every 10 minutes. In fact, when we sat down with them, one of the engineers here, Carl's here, I mean, they sat down with us in one of the meetings and they said, well, wait, where's the catch? Like, this is too good to be true. And they don't understand it. The economic impacts of deploying a Bitcoin mine is quite profound. What comes out of a Bitcoin mine is hot water, water that's 70 to 80 degrees Celsius. You know what you could do with that water? In a stupid way, you can build a community pool that's heated. In an awesome way, you can enable aquaponics. In a really awesome way, you can enable tropical fish farming with that water that comes out of it. Right, so the impact that we'll have, where we will deploy, will be quite profound. And I'm very excited that next time Dan gets up here at BizNews, he's not going to get up and just talk about it esoterically or theoretically. He's actually going to tell you about an instance and a deployment, and this is the impact that it's having. So we're very, very excited about that. Okay, I'm going to stop there. But in closing, just before we go to Q&A, I think when you look at all the things that are happening, look at the data. Look at it underlying and don't just think about these things in silly terms. Number go up or number go down. It's much, much bigger than that. And I think there's a new economic world order birthing right now. And AI and Bitcoin is the underlying currents that is pushing us forward in that direction. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay, how are we doing this?
I forgot to open up my shirt. I had a t-shirt yesterday that said, I told you so, but I thought I wouldn't wear it on stage today because I didn't know what the Bitcoin price would be today.
Oh, Stafford. Boy, did he tell us so. He's been telling me so since, I don't know, what price?
I think the first time you and I chatted about it, I think we were 12, 11 or 12. No. We were below $1,000.
Below $1,000. Yeah. And my friend Bruce Dacus, he's the other rich guy I know because he was also buying Bitcoin when it was that kind of level.
Bruce, yeah.
Anybody else bought under $1,000 a Bitcoin? Yeah. There's.
And some of you listen.
One. Somebody listen. Two.
I'll try to convince Trevor to sell more of his property. It's like, get rid of that property. You don't need it. Just put in the Bitcoin.
I was in the room when Lesetša Kanyako, our Reserve Bank governor, said what he said. But it's been beautifully and very badly cut, because the panel discussion was a whole bunch of Bitcoin people from the CEO of Coinbase and others. And he was trying to be light. He was, because he's got a great sense of humor. And he just joked about it. He said, well, why not have a mutton reserve or a cow reserve? And that was taken terribly out of context. So I think your meeting with the Saab is probably going to be a lot different to what some people believe, because those guys are not, they're not dumb.
I think it's going to be a lot harder. It's been hard, and I think it's going to be really hard. And it's you know, you need to understand, if you take a look at Saab and who they are and their interrelation with the banks and their role, Bitcoin is this thing that destroys their relevance. You know, it brings in this deflationary thing that works with math and physics, and it has no humanity. I mean, every 10 minutes, Bitcoin does what it does, and it mines, and it's tied to energy, and every 4 years, it does what it does, and that deflationary aspect to them, they just can't consume it.
Okay, so just slow down a little.
Okay.
How is it going to destroy the relevance of the Saab and banks?
Okay,
just slowly.
Okay, careful how you phrase that. Okay, because I don't want it to come out that I say Bitcoin's going to destroy the relevance of the Saab. No, I think it will accentuate the relevance of the Saab. I think South Africa does need a strategic Bitcoin reserve, and the only people that can make that happen is inside of that institution. And we've got to convince them why this is not dissimilar from our gold reserves, not dissimilar from our oil reserves, not dissimilar from, you know, we got a lot of other reserves, and we should have this. Currency debasement, you know, foreign attacks on us. These are all reasons to have a strategic Bitcoin reserve. So I think they need to be the custodians of that, and we need to go sit down with them and explain to them why. But if you take a look at this from a long-term perspective, I mean, you know, the money is broken because of what we do with money. If we take a look at the Fed, we take a look at banks in the United States. When I was looking at the number, more than 80% of all US dollars in circulation today was printed in the last 5 years. Let me say that again. More than 80% of US dollars in circulation today was printed in the last 5 years. That's not sustainable. You know, money printing, that M2 supply, that it just cannot keep doing what it's doing, the debasement. You know, US dollar, 1971 to now, it's lost 96% of its buying power since 1971 when they detached from gold.
How much has the rand lost since then?
Okay, I don't even look at that. I mean, that's extraordinary. The numbers are equally bad. So,
but Stafford, the dollar is the global currency.
Right.
And they're printing dollars, which are being sucked up by people around the world. So they're funding, the rest of the world is funding this lifestyle of the Americans. Why would they switch it off?
Well, I don't think they have to switch it off. That's the thing. What they need to do is do a better job of monetizing their debt. And I think stable coins is a very real way they get involved. I mean, it's a very simple thing. Look at the chessboard, right? Donald Trump has this $36, $37 trillion headache. Doge is not going to fix that. It's impossible. You know, Doge may cut $1 billion here, $2 billion there. But in relation to $36 trillion, I don't think it's going to have a net effect. I really don't. They can't put in austerity measures. It's the pain, the medicine would destroy that economy. So what do? They go take 200,000 Bitcoins and they move it from confiscation to Federal Reserve. They reclassify it. They say they're going to buy 1 million Bitcoin over 5 years. They move stable coins into the United States.
They said that they're going to buy 1 million.
The Loomis bill, if you take a look at our group.
It's
just been submitted now to Senate. So it's gone into the Senate today.
Did that help the price?
Not yet. Okay, I think there's more macro things going on relative to price. So, but I mean, if you take a look at the chess pieces on the board, this is what they're up to. And this is the only way they get out of the hole that we are all in with them. And to continue their lifestyle is to do the Bitcoin moves that they're doing, to do the stablecoin things that they're doing. And that's what they're up to. It's very, very clear what Trump is doing. And I think other countries will look at it because it also takes a look at the amount of gold being bought by China right now. I mean, China's money printer is going brr at the moment too. It takes a look at BRICS and they've got to do something quite drastic. So the timing of him coming in, pulling out of NATO, you know, making noise about that, pulling out of NATO, WHO pulling out of that. I think this all are the pieces of this new economic world order. It is us moving to a new gold standard. And that gold standard is Bitcoin. It's a new hard money.
I want to throw something at you. Another one of the divorce events 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Neil Ferguson, who's probably the greatest financial historian, said that he was in a small conversation again with the FT, and he was asked, would you buy Bitcoin? And he said, if I lived in a country that had a very turbulent society, the majority of my assets would be in Bitcoin, which I thought was really interesting. Yep. But now extrapolate that to the world as a whole. Yeah. We're in a very, very strange place in the world. Has this been one of the reasons for the accelerated interest in Bitcoin? You can tell us about the ETFs or elaborate on how that boom has happened.
I think we all know what's going on. I think that we are in that fourth wave. I think we are in the crisis phase of that movement. I think what happened in 2008 is still echoing in everyone's minds. It hasn't gone away. We bailed out all those banks. We printed more money to get them out. Nobody went to jail. And those guys all got bonuses. And it's very clear in our memory. And I think Gen Z's don't believe in banks. Gen Z's don't believe in fiat currencies. Gen Z's don't want to own things. Gen Z's don't believe in the physical. They believe in the ethereal. Like my kids don't want a car. I have a 24-year-old and a 21-year-old. They don't want cars. They want, you know, the Uber app with my credit card. Mm. But they believe transportation is a flowing service.
They don't live in Hermanus.
But
did you try Uber yet?
Yeah, no,
it doesn't work exactly.
Yeah, but my point is that there's this generation that, and we're going to see a lot of wild spilling from boomers into this generation. I don't think this generation is going to run off with the wealth that they're going to inherit and go buy gold or equities. I think they're going to buy Bitcoin. I think they're going to go to hard money. I think they're going to go to something that is, you just can't debase it. And I think the world, so yes, the ETF's performance, the amount of money flowing into Bitcoin, just all over. I mean, those inflows, why is it happening? It's because the money is broken. The money's broken globally. And no one's coming to fix it. But luckily, in 2009, something was birthed. And that something is the substrate that we need to give us hard money again. You know, we want gold, gold, gold. But gold, I mean, gold just doesn't work in the new dispensation. Gold doesn't work in a digital phase. Gold is, you can't pick it up and it's not easily divisible. It's not, we don't even know if all the gold is in Fort Knox. So we don't even know if all the gold in Fort Knox is gold. I mean, there's all these challenges. So all these old instruments that we depended on in the 20th century don't work in the 21st century.
Can you imagine that scandal? We had Cookie telling us last night about the oil, the salad oil scandal. Yeah. Which happened with American Express. Imagine if they go to Fort Knox and they find out that gold ain't there, or maybe it's just been painted with a gold paint.
Or they find out there's more gold than we thought that was there.
Surely not. Anyway, okay. Right. What is the energy cost to produce one Bitcoin? That's from Jonathan.
Depends. I mean, I looked at Carl there. I mean, these are difficult equations to come up with, but the energy cost, it all depends on, I don't know where you are, but it all depends on the type of machine you have. It all depends on temperature. It depends on the cost of the energy that you're procuring. It depends on the Bitcoin price. There are lots of factors that combine to give you that. But I mean, we've got something that says, you know, if we can get between 11 and 35 cents per kilowatt hour, we can build a significant business. I mean, our business case to Eskom is, at 11 to 35 cents per kilowatt hour, if they give us a gig, we'll pay them R1 billion a year. So one gig will equal R1 billion to them of energy that's wasted today. Wow. So one gig equals R1 billion to Eskom. What way? So let me give you this stat. Here's an interesting one, right? I don't know, Carl, can you put it into the group? Put that. So I'm going to ask Carl to put it in the group. So Carl is our chief scientist inside of a company called BitMEX, and he's my Bitcoin mining go-to guy. He's going to put the slides into the BizNews Bitcoin group. What Carl put together was the following. If Eskom, now listen to this very carefully. If Eskom started mining Bitcoin in 2020 when we told them to, in 2020, if they mined Bitcoin between then and the 1st of January, 2025, this year, they would have mined over 406,000 Bitcoin.
Worth?
If they cashed out 50% of that, they would have paid off their debt, their 400 million rand debt, and they would be sitting with 400 million rand in surplus. Let me say that again. In 5 years of Bitcoin mining, including load shedding and only with curtailed power, giving us 2 gigawatts at a 60 to 70% availability over those 5 years, Eskom today, if they didn't trade and they just hodled, would be sitting with 800 billion rands of Bitcoin. They would be sitting with over 400,000 Bitcoin.
But Steph, anybody who'd listened to you in 2020 and bought Bitcoin would be sitting in a similarly fortunate
situation. So we're telling them again today.
There we are.
For the next 5 years, okay, mine Bitcoin, and the numbers that we believe the numbers that we showed them for the last 5 years will be dwarfed with the numbers laying ahead.
That's why you're wearing a t-shirt. how do the Bitcoin mines give the power back to the grid?
Well, very simply put, we look at it this way. We connect to the grid, and we get that energy when it's available, and we give Eskom a big green button and a big red button. Let's give them an orange button and a big red button. Okay, so the orange button they hit when they have power for us. So as the power demand goes down and those turbines are spinning and they don't want to slow down, they hit the orange button. We take all that power instantaneously. We use it. When they want their power back, they hit the red button and we give it back to them instantaneously.
Has anyone else done that in the world?
Yeah, it's happening all over the world today. I mean, if you take a look at the ERCOT, so if those of you that are like, how, the engineers, I'm very happy to sit down with the engineers afterwards with Carl and talk you through it. But if you take a look at the Texas grid in the United States today, remember three winters ago, remember they had the big freeze. And Warren Buffett and the Berkshire Hathaway guys went in there and they said to the Texas ERCOT guys, spend 18 billion rand, $18 billion, and we'll put in gas peaker plants. And gas peaker plants are plants that run, and when demand drops down, they grab the demand and then they burn electricity. So you don't have to slow down your equipment and your boilers and all of that. That would have been 18 billion. The ERCOT guys put in Bitcoin mines. And when they did, that's when Warren Buffett came out and said, it's rat poison. That's the time he said it was rat poison.
Why?
Because he lost the Berkshire Hathaway lost the gas peaker plant deal with the Texas ERCOT grid. But when they did that and they attached the Bitcoin mines to the grid, they created such immense grid stability and they could expand out on their deployment, etc., that in the last 2 or 3 winters, if you take a look at the ERCOT grid, irrespective of the weather and the cold snaps and the demand, they never switched off. They never cut out. And that was directly related to the Bitcoin mines. And if you want to go Google that, look at YouTube, you'll see the ERCOT management team actually speaking about exactly technically how they did it over there. But they utilized Bitcoin mines for that. And obviously, they got Bitcoins from it. So they solved their grid stability issues, right? Their demand issues. It enabled them to bring more alternative energy onto the grid, and it monetized their curtailed energy.
Martin's got a question. He says, and this was one that often troubled me, what is the risk of Bitcoin being hacked with the advent of quantum computing? Experts say that Bitcoin becomes decodable or hackable. Also, Bitcoin isn't the only cryptocurrency, so there are hundreds of other cryptocurrencies. What will happen when people shift to other cryptocurrencies?
Okay, I don't know. That's a lot. So first of all, I'm going to say.
Yeah. All right. You're a Bitcoin. He's a Bitcoin maximalist. Other cryptocurrencies, rat poison.
Well, okay. Trump Trump did it. You don't see XRP, Solana, Cardano, you know, shitcoin, purple coin, yellow coin, strategic Bitcoin reserve. You don't see it.
All right. So we'll leave that part of the
Let's leave that out. What about Ethereum? Let me say this with Ethereum.
Stay.
You want to make a billion, 1 million? Buy Ethereum. Okay. remind me the first part.
You want to make a big fortune? You want to make a small fortune? Get a big fortune, put it into Ethereum. That's what you say. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Just the first part of that question.
First part of the question was, what about quantum computing hacking?
Oh, that's a good question. So this always happens whenever like someone makes an announcement around quantum computing, and then you'll kind of see the Bitcoin price wobble. And that's because people have the theory that when you've got quantum computing, then you can take the elliptical curve, cryptography and the SHA-256, all these like cryptographic aspects of Bitcoin, and you could actually gain access into Bitcoin. Well, a couple of things with that argument. The simple thing says, if we have a quantum computer, we'll have quantum cryptography. Okay, that's like the simple thing. We'll invent quantum cryptography. And it's very easy to implement a change on the Bitcoin network should that happen. We could really pivot to a new derivative, a new fork of the chain, and that would be the fork. So all your Bitcoin would move. You'd have a copy of all the Bitcoin that you had on this chain, on that chain, and we'd have a new fork. We could do that very, very simply. So in the event of quantum computing. But quantum computing is very, very, it's far away, number one. Number two is, if you have a quantum computer, you're not going to hack Bitcoin. You're not going to go after the $2 trillion. You're going to go after like the 900 trillion of stuff, the 450 trillion of stuff that's actually out there, right? You're actually going to go for that. Not this little mean Mickey Mouse thing called Bitcoin. You're really not. And also, if you've got a quantum computing, what people don't understand, your energy signature, with that, we will find you so quickly. So when you switch that thing on, boom, we hope you're next to a very big power source. First of all, because if you're going to take on the Bitcoin network, it's not just taking on algorithmically the cryptography itself. You've got to take on that exahash of power. Right, so you're gonna have all that power, and if you finally achieved it, you've kind of lost out because we know where you are, and we'll find you with your quantum computer. So if you really look at the practical aspects of, you know, a quantum cryptography hack, it's impractical. If it happened, we could fork the chain, and we'll find the person that did it. And I think Bitcoin has less to worry about. I think the world banks would have more to worry about. I would go after every fiat bank in the entire world if I had a cryptography machine that could do it. I'd leave Bitcoin alone.
Who's we? We'll find you. We're going to find
it. Well, it's Interpol, the whatever, the FBI.
Okay, but not, you're not them. That's we.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. What happens, a great question from Stefan, something I've been thinking about as well. What happens to the miners, Bitcoin miners, once Bitcoin has been mined out?
Well, I mean, miners make money in two ways today. They make money off the transaction fees, and they make money off the issuance of Bitcoin. So they'll make money off transaction fees. But that's when it runs out in 2140. But I believe a lot will happen with Bitcoin mining between now and 2140. I think Bitcoin miners, if you take a look at the businesses today, what's very, very interesting is they're taking a lot of their power and they're utilizing it for AI. So the AI compute needs that are out there, you're seeing Bitcoin miners opening up. So when they don't have power from the grid, because they're taking only curtailed or they're on-demand power, so whilst they give that over to the AI. So you're seeing a split between Bitcoin mining and AI. They're diversifying their portfolios. Also, what we see happening is Bitcoin miners are selling less and less of their Bitcoins that they have. If you take a look at the big Bitcoin miners like Mara and Riot and these big Bitcoin miners, what we see them doing, they're actually hodling their Bitcoins. And that's going to create more scarcity. So I also think more utility will come from it. So if nation states start moving money across Bitcoin, I mean, these transactions are going to be much bigger than you see today. Much, much, much bigger. So I think it'll be very lucrative from a transaction fee perspective in 2140 once the Bitcoins have run out. So yeah, I think for miners, it's a nirvana laying ahead.
Corin Dawson asks, she says, China is busy with its own cryptocurrency. Can you comment on this impact globally?
Bring it on. I think there's only one. The problem that everyone has is like, this is the question. Can the Bitcoin code is open source. Can I just go and build my own Bitcoin? Like everyone can, anyone can. The problem is you have the big issue is the 51% attack. So if 51% of all the miners got together and coagulated amongst themselves, the theory is that they could attack the chain. They could change the protocol. They could have a negative impact on Bitcoin, right? That's the theory. But to achieve that with a network that is so decentralized is almost impossible. Almost impossible. So I do not believe a nation state will rise up right now with their own cryptocurrency and come after that. Will we see them trying something that's like a shitcoin? Probably they'll try it. And they'll claim that it's faster, it's better. It'll be like an XRP clone or a Solana or Cardano clone, maybe, but it won't be Bitcoin. There will only ever be one layer one. There will not be another layer one. There is only one, and there will only ever be one. Okay. Yeah, thank you, James. The one-handed clap.
Another. Show your cap. Steph, yeah. Jan van der Westhuizen wants to know, how do the majority of the population in South Africa buy a bread with Bitcoin?
That's happening. Go Bitcoin Ikasi. It's happening. There's a township here on the coastline close by. The whole town township runs on Bitcoin. They save in Bitcoin. They spend Bitcoin. They do haircuts. They earn Bitcoin. And what they're using is, it's not Bitcoin layer one. There's another layer on top of Bitcoin. It's L2 layer two, and that's the Lightning Network. And if there's one thing that's not being focused on enough in the world today is the Lightning Network. And the Lightning Network essentially is this peer-to-peer layer on top of Bitcoin that abstracts the transaction away from the actual mining happening. And it can happen on channels above Bitcoin. And when it's finally closed, then it happens inside of Bitcoin. I'm not going to explain Lightning here, but essentially Lightning enables hundreds of thousands of transactions a second instantaneously on the Bitcoin network. So you know that thing about Bitcoin so slow every 10 minutes? We like that. We want Bitcoin to be slow. We don't want Bitcoin to be fast. We want Bitcoin to be tied to energy. We want math and physics to do the transaction management. We don't want some cute Silicon Valley engineer with a couple of machines scaling up transactions. We don't want that. Bitcoin we want. We want the oil tanker to take 20 miles to make a U-turn. Okay, that's why countries like Bitcoin. But on the top, we want noise, we want speed, and that's layer two. That's the Lightning Network. And that enables people with wallets, which live on layer three. So they download wallets of Satoshi, Moon Wallet, whatever those wallets are on the top. And then they populate those wallets with their Satoshis, and they walk around and they spend their Satoshis, and that's instantaneous settlement amongst them. And that they're not spending the fees that you see on top of the Bitcoin network, and it's not as slow. It's instantaneous settlement.
Are those wallets like your wallet in your phone?
Yeah, you can download it. I mean, if you have, go download. The one that I use is the Moon Wallet. I mean, there's Wallet of Satoshi, M-U-U-N. Download it. Send some Bitcoin into that wallet. Just send like 10 rands worth of Bitcoin into that. It's a few Satoshis. And then when you meet somebody else, just pay them and see the transaction. It's the fastest exchange of value in the history of humanity.
How many people accept it?
I mean, we got hundreds of millions of people in the world. I mean, I did a demo at a conference where I showed the utilization of the Lightning Network and Bitcoin to take rands over the Bitcoin network and settle in a pub in pounds in a nanosecond.
But I'm talking more of what's happening in the African continent, for instance. Is somebody in Malawi able to get value from someone in South Africa through
instantaneously, yes, absolutely, yeah, instantaneously. Yeah, remittances is a big, but there's more. There's remittances is a more multidimensional thing, but yes, remittances is there's quite a few companies right now that are using the Bitcoin Lightning Network with wallets for remittances. It's happening,
and then
it really drops the cost of a remittance. I mean, you can send. You know what's really cool with this? Right now, remittances is broken because of the transaction fees.
Yeah.
So if you go to one of these retailers, so you go into a PEP. PEP allows you to do remittances, right? You're a Zimbabwean, you want to send something to Harare, or you're Ghanaian, you want to send something to Ghana. The problem is you have to have at least 800 Rand to 1,500 Rand to actually do a remittance because of the transaction fee. And when you do it, it's clunky, right? And it's kind of, you hope it's going to work. And when they get it over there, they're standing in a line waiting. If you do it across the Bitcoin network utilizing Lightning, he could be standing. He doesn't have to go to PEP. He could be standing with his phone and he can send 20 Rand for the loaf of bread when his mom pinged him that she's in the line and she needs to pay for the loaf of bread instantaneously.
And that will be accepted where she's buying the loaf of bread.
Yeah, provided the merchant accepts it, yes.
And how many merchants do accept it?
Well, that's growing. It's growing. More and more merchants are accepting.
But now, at this point?
It's infancy. It's not where we want. I mean, Pick and Pay accepts this. Pick and Pay works this way. You can go into Pick and Pay with your Luno, Valor, or your Moon wallet, your wallet of Satoshi, and you can go settle inside of a Pick and Pay for your groceries today. And notice the transaction speed when you're there. It's faster than your credit card. And guess what? Pick and Pay gets those Satoshis immediately. When you pay with your credit card, Pick and Pay gets their money after 3 to 5 days.
How come they are ahead of the game? Is that Sean?
Yeah, no, I think it was before his time, though.
I thought so, too. Yeah.
No, that was a Skunk's Work project that started growing. And I think they're doing many millions of transactions per day. And the thing is, people don't talk about this. The media doesn't pay attention to it, but it's happening. And when you start unfolding the numbers, it usually shocks people. Like, wait a minute, I can go to a Pick and Pay and I can pay with my Bitcoin? Yeah. Take your Luno or your Valor wallet out, wallet app. Go to the kiosk in the front and ask the lady, how can I settle my bill? And watch, you just tap it and it settles. You walk away with your groceries, utilizing your Bitcoin.
How many premium subscribers are here? Okay. once you're a premium subscriber, you can join one of the BizNews WhatsApp groups. It's only for premium subscribers. There is a phenomenal Bitcoin group, very, very active, and staff spends a lot of time there educating people. So that's another reason to join up.
And
it's premium.
A Bitcoin only group.
Yeah, so don't not ask Ethereum. He's not gonna take your question.
I'm never gonna ask us questions.
But the other question is, will you please just tell us about the Bitcoin standard and the fiat standard? Have you still got copies?
Yeah, it's good. There's a new one out.
You got a copy of that still?
Yeah, we got the Bitcoin standard and the fiat standard. Those are great. Brilliant. I see them there. Thank you. I mean, those are, if you want. So I always tell people, don't go buy Bitcoin. Go study Bitcoin. Go study it. Okay. And a great way to start is the Bitcoin standard and then the fiat standard. You can start with either one, but they're quite academic. There's a book that's out right now, and it's a book that I think is the best book to step into this world. It's called The Big Print by Lawrence Leopard. Get that book. I read it and I was blown away. Unfortunately, it's still in Kindle. I don't know if it's hardcover yet. Definitely not in South Africa yet, but it's The Big Print. And that book's, if you want to orange pull somebody, if you want to understand things better, that's the book to get. I finished it last week and I was blown away. He completely unpacks the fiat world. And he talks about the currency debasement. He talks about the Fed. He talks about money printing. He talks about the American life and how American life in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, it was a one income home and it had cars, et cetera. And like that, if you fast forward to today, like that's not possible. He talks about the suicide rates. He talks about the fact that we are all living a fiat lie. I mean, if you live in the fiat world, you live a lie. And the beauty about Bitcoin is Bitcoin kind of, it's like Neo in the Matrix, where that thing comes out the back of his head and he actually looks around and he realizes that everything's a lie. When I came into Bitcoin, what I loved about it was the fact that it taught me about money. And that's the beautiful thing about Bitcoin. My daughters, my 21-year-old and my 24-year-old, they understand money because of Bitcoin. I didn't explain Bitcoin to them first. I explained money to them first. And when you start understanding money, then you understand that you've been lied to. And the problem is economists walk around with those Keynesian ways of thinking and like we need inflation and we need central banks and we need all of that. And it's just a lie. It's all a lie. Everything around us is a lie. And you can see it economically speaking. That lie is maturing and it's time for that lie to mature right now. That's why our country is in trouble, monetarily speaking. That's why in the United States, I mean, take a look at their birth rates. Take a look at their suicide rates. Take a look at their depression rates. Take a look at everything that's happening in that country. It's because the money is broken. And when you have strong money that doesn't break, if you have money that deflates, i.e. in scarce, it becomes more and more scarce. And it becomes more and more valuable. When you've got hard money, your perspective changes. You know, my perspective, Warren always asks me this. I mean, he asks me, what's my Bitcoin exposure? It just keeps growing, right? The majority of what I own and my net worth is in Bitcoin. I'll never disclose how much. But you know what's amazing when you live in the Bitcoin standard world? Everything around you gets cheaper. Everything. Every year, everything gets cheaper. My house gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. My house used to cost 600 Bitcoin. Then it became 40-something Bitcoin. And now it's like single-digit Bitcoins, right? Everything, when you start looking at the world through the Bitcoin standard, it's quite astonishing how the matrix drops and you actually see the lie. We think your house price is going up. No, it's going up. Now pair that with inflation. The property that Magnus Haystack wants you to go and invest in, yeah, it's climbing up. Now pair that with inflation, right? With currency debasement. Now, you know what? Put a track on there and show the Bitcoin price relative to that asset that you acquired via Magnus Haystack and watch the performance difference. By the way, I saw Magnus earlier today and I'm so proud that Magnus is going to go to a Bitcoin blockchain course at UCT. He signed up. He's going to do it. And that's a win for me. That's my biggest win at the business conference right now.
Stavid Marcy, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Downings is South Africa's leading marquee infrastructure company, proudly celebrating 25 years of excellence. Renowned for creativity, innovation, and unmatched technical expertise, our event marquees and semi-permanent structures elevate any project with style and sophistication. Whether it's a corporate event or a commercial project, we tailor every structure to meet your needs with world-class precision. Visit downings.co.za to consult with our expert team. Downings, your trusted marquee specialists nationwide.